It is Monday, January the 7th, 2013. I am Steve Growick, the webmaster of www.gerweck.net, Growick.net, your source on the World Wide Web since 1997 for all your pro wrestling news. And I've got somebody on the line with me who actually told me she's been following my website for about 10 years, which I definitely appreciate. She is a former wrestler, former manager, and a truth crusader who's always pushing for the truth, and we'll talk about that in this interview. Today I get Liz Savage. How are you doing today, Liz?
Good. How are you?
We're doing great. We appreciate your time, and let's start a little bit with wrestling before we get into some other crazy areas that we'll talk about in this discussion here. How did you get started in wrestling? Who were your favorite wrestlers growing up?
Well, I've been a wrestling fan as long as I can remember. I'm 33 years old now. Some of my first memories were watching like the Killer Bees and the British Bulldogs and, you know, Hulk Hogan before he was famous, the Iron Sheik, you know, and watching, growing up in the 80s, watching old school 80s WWF. Like, I was a huge fan of Rowdy Roddy Piper and Jimmy Superfly Snuka, the Macho Man. You know, obviously Hogan, he was the American superstar of wrestling back then, the Ultimate Warrior. I really looked up to Sherry Martel as a wrestler and as a manager, you know, and other female wrestlers who rolled through and really changed things, like Luna Vachon. You know, she came in and she didn't want to be treated just like a, you know, another woman. And I grew up like watching this and always wanting to take part in it. And when I was 23, I found out that I could. I didn't really know much about independent wrestling before then. And there was a wrestling radio show called the No Holds Barred Wrestling Radio Show. We listened to every week, and they did a calendar girl contest, and my friends made me send a picture in. Otherwise, they were going to send a picture of me in. So I sent a picture in, and I didn't think anything of it. They chose me for the calendar girl contest, and I thought it was a prank. They started taking me to independent wrestling events as well as WWE events, and they told me, yeah, you can do this. You know, there's wrestling schools around. So I didn't have money for wrestling school at the time, but I wanted to see if I could at least hack it or at least try it. So they sent me to a school that Tony DeVito had at the time in New York, and I went there just for the day to see, you know, if I could even hack it, taking bumps and, you know, being thrown around. And I did. He made me take over 200 bumps that day. I took 10 body slams, and I survived it. And I said, this is hella fun. His school shut down shortly later. So I started looking around, and I ended up getting into managing through meeting Joe Rules and getting a part of becoming a part of Dangerous Women of Wrestling. And then also I worked with Joe Rules. He brought me to Connecticut. He brought me into New Jersey and all over New Jersey with JWA and with a couple other promotions, starting as a manager. And he trained me as a manager. And then from there, I ended up training, you know, through the woodwork with various wrestlers and various trainers, mostly on the road. But I worked a little bit with Bulldog Blansky. I did different training seminars in different places. I went down to the Chikara School one day. I spent a lot of time in friends' rings. I spent time down at ECPW with Gino Caruso at his school working with Teresa Lopez. And, you know, it was basically like a work in progress. I started as a manager, and I wanted to wrestle, so I continued to push myself and find out, like, how I could do this. And with limited money, going to school wasn't really an option, so I trained on the side while managing.
You probably quickly realized that maybe managing is a ways to go, because obviously you take a lot less bumps when you're the manager.
You do take a lot less bumps when you're the manager, but I can tell you from experience, sometimes you take a lot harder bumps when you're the manager, especially when you're as determined as I am to make sure that your person comes out on top. Sometimes you have to put yourself on the line to make sure that happens.
Well, how are you doing physically after all the years in the business? How's the body holding up?
Not well. I mean, I've had some injuries, and a lot of my injuries don't really have anything to do with wrestling. A few did. I'm also a horse trainer, so I had injuries to my foot before I ever wrestled from being flipped over on. I tore a ligament out of the arch of my foot when I had first started out, and that laid me up for 6 months. And Since then, I've gotten multiple concussions. I injured my neck and strained my neck. I also was injured by some wrestlers from Delaware purposely, and they ended up dislocating my shoulder. If I knew those guys' names, I'd tell you who they are because they're a bunch of dirt bags. And they purposely injured me, and it wasn't pretty. I had to actually pop my shoulder in my back in myself 2 days later. But yeah, I mean, honestly, I'm still okay. I'm still physically good, but I have a lot of consistent aches and pains from wrestling. That's for sure.
Well, I guess I was a little surprised when I kind of was getting in contact with you that you're no longer wrestling at all. Why is that? How come you're no longer really involved with wrestling anymore?
Well, there's multiple reasons. I moved from the East Coast to the West Coast, and things are very different out here. You know, there aren't as many independent promotions out here, first of all. There's only a handful of promotions. Most of those promotions only use their students or, you know, people that they know and have worked with for years. I mean, granted, like, I have done a couple of shows out here. I did a show with Mach 1. I was featured on some Lucha, which was really neat. But out here, a lot of it tends to be who you know and whose ass you'll kiss versus, you know, how much talent you have. And, you know, wrestling as a female has always been really difficult and is very difficult to deal with because wrestling, the pro wrestling world is very patriarchal and women are always held to a double standard. You know, women, if they date wrestlers, they're a rat, they're a whore. Men, they can go and date as many girls as they possibly can and they're seen as like, you know, the man. And it's a very hard thing to overcome because a lot of the women who do get involved in wrestling only get involved because they want to be a celebrity and they'll go through anything that they have to in order to become a celebrity, whether it be changing their body, surgeries, you know, sleeping around to get bookings, things such as that. And it's honestly, in my opinion, that's disgusting. And it's not really the way people should be treated. And it's not the way people should treat themselves. And to me, if you want to be shown respect, you have to treat yourself with respect. And that's a big part of this business that has been lost over the years is respect, because I've noticed that wrestling to a lot of people isn't really just a sport anymore. It's a business. And there's a lot of people out there who are willing to be cutthroat and take advantage to make their business goals better, whether it be, you know, running a wrestling school and telling everybody, oh, you can be a wrestler and, oh, you'll get bookings and just pay me $300 a month, or it be, you know, a girl being told you need to get boobs and if you're my girlfriend, I'll make sure you're booked on every show. I mean, a lot of that needs to be changed and, you know, people need to stand up for themselves a little more. And honestly, I don't really want to be part of a world that treats me badly.
When was the last wrestling booking that you took part in or wrestled? And do you kind of miss wrestling at this point?
I do miss wrestling because I really love the fans. I really love most of the people I work with. Granted, you know, every business is full of liars, crooks, and thieves, you know, and wrestling is definitely probably up there in the top of those fields, along with like maybe like the banking industry. But there's a lot of good people involved in wrestling. I've made a lot of amazing friends from all over the world through wrestling, you know, met a lot of incredible fans, worked with a lot of incredible bookers and great business people who took really good care of us. I've also gotten to meet a lot of people who, as a child, I idolized, and that was really cool because I either got to see that they were either awesome people or total dirtbags, you know, and that really changed a lot of my opinions on wrestling and on people and things. But, you know, as I said, this industry is really, really corrupt, and it's really hurtful. So, I mean, as much as I miss it, I don't want to put myself out there for anyone who's not going to appreciate what I do for them.
Can we get into who the good guys were and who the dirtbags were?
A little bit, yeah, I don't mind. I mean, I've worked for over 30 promotions in the past 9.5 years that I've been involved. Some of the best promotions I've worked for were ECPW in New Jersey, Gino Caruso's promotion. You know, he makes sure that all of his workers treat people with respect. He treats everyone with respect. You know, he runs great family-friendly shows. you know, he's very on top of it. He's never, you know, lied to me. He's never, like, canceled a show. He's always really professional. I've worked with Dangerous Women of Wrestling since I started, and granted, they're not everybody's cup of tea. I've always been paid, you know, the bookers and the owners have always treated me fairly nicely. You know, I've always gotten to be able to travel with them and do, you know, fun stuff and kind of put myself into, you know, places where I feel comfortable and, you know, say when I don't feel comfortable. Granted, that doesn't always work, but, you know, they've given me a better opportunity. JWA, which is where I started, Joe Rules is a great person. He is a great teacher. He is a really good promoter when he puts his mind to it. You know, he's given a lot of people opportunity where others said that they wouldn't. You know, I worked for Connecticut Championship Wrestling until that closed, and that was a wonderful time. We had a wrestling promotion in New Jersey called Awesome. That was one of the best companies I worked for. We always made sure we had a lot of fun and we took care of everybody. You know, and I've worked with other promotions, like some of the bad promotions that I've worked with, you know, I mean, granted, like, things weren't always like what they were made out to be. Like, there was a, somebody tried to start an AWA Connecticut promotion, and they had an agenda behind it, and it really bothered me. They had come from Pennsylvania. They were running small shows there. They came into our turf in Connecticut, and they asked, you know, they booked us, and then they were very sexist. They refused to pay me because I was a girl. I was the only female on any of their shows. One show they did have, they brought Luna Vachon in, and they brought another female who I was friends with, Belladonna from Pennsylvania. But, like, they really just treated people very badly. They didn't want to, they weren't fair to the workers who were in Connecticut already. They got on a lot of people. They said a lot of bad things, and I really didn't like that. Another promotion I have a huge problem with is NWS in New Jersey. I don't like what they do to people. I think Panzerino is a lying thief. I've watched them abuse people. They used to come into our promotion and promote their shows while ripping our flyers down. You know, they try to act like they own New Jersey. They do not own New Jersey. You know, they put they do things like, this is something that I've never agreed with, and I know that they've always done it in wrestling, is using ticket sellers, kids who are untrained, you know, making them sell tickets, throwing them into a ring. A lot of times these kids get hurt. Sometimes the workers who they're in the ring with who are trained get hurt because of them. And it's just, it's really a poor way to run a business. It's really unfair to your business colleagues and to the people you work with. And he talks a lot about people, and honestly, like, you know, I don't think it's right, you know, putting people down, saying things when you don't know people, you know, and making assumptions and then going online and talking. I mean, dude, you're supposed to be running a business. You're not supposed to be out there talking about other companies. I mean, and hopefully one day someone puts a slap down on him, because running fake charity shows is bullshit. If your charity show isn't donating the money to the charity but is still lining your pocket, there's a problem there. Because I've worked many charity shows. I've traveled really far to work charity shows for free. And when I hear that, you know, promoters are lining their pockets from charity shows, but charities are only getting a small donation from the show, that's where it goes back into lying and being, you know, corrupt and not being honest with people. And, you know, I feel that, like, in the independent scene, since we're not contracted, we're not paid, we don't have health insurance, you know, and we're not paid very well. I mean, we are paid, but we're not paid very well. You know, the promoters should think about that. They should think about the people that are putting their bodies on the line for them, and do a little bit more to respect them and show respect for these people and to show respect for their audience. Because if you don't respect your audience, you don't have anything.
I think it would be a really good independent film is to follow independent wrestlers around. I know there was one on, I think it was Nat Geo. I think it might have been the NWS promotion, now that I think about it. But just to follow an independent wrestler from working his 9-to-5 job, training at the gym, trying to eat right, and then on the weekends maybe driving 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, no matter where they're going to be. They're going to get there, they're going to wrestle, make their $50, whatever they're getting paid, get back in their vehicle and go back home, and then maybe even go to the next show. So, and then obviously you were talking about some of the things going on with independent promotions in terms of promoting the show, some of the shady things that go on, the ticket sellers, and I just think that'd be an excellent documentary, because I think a lot of WWE fans, TNA fans probably don't realize, you know, independent wrestling is the backbone of professional wrestling. Everybody you see on television came from independent wrestling. I mean, they started from somewhere, and just to show what exactly is going on in independent. I mean, there's a lot, as you said, there's a lot of really good independent promoters out there. They pay well, they treat you well, but on the flip side, there's a lot of shady people. I think maybe independent promoters kind of get the same reputation as a used car salesman. I mean, you know, some are good, but on the other hand, there's a lot of shady things going on that a lot of the wrestling fans are not seeing out there.
Yeah, and that's a big thing. It's like people don't realize, like, I've run wrestling. I've been on both sides of it. I've been a performer and I've been a promoter. And when you're running a wrestling show, you can't depend on your door to pay your workers. If you're telling people that you have a payroll and that you're telling people that you're going to pay them, you better make sure you have that money up front. Don't depend on your freaking door. And if you don't know how to promote a show, if you want to be a promoter, like, don't just jump in and try to start a wrestling company. Go and work for a wrestling company that already exists. Learn what's going on. Learn the ins and outs of how things work. Because, you know, it's like I've been to wrestling shows where the ring shows up late, or the ring shows up and there's no ring crew, you know, and nobody knows how to put the ring together. And I show up and I'm like exhausted from traveling, and then I got to direct people on how to put a ring together, you know, and it's like, you got to think about insurance. You got to think about safety. You got to think about, like, if you're going to book somebody who is known, you know, to be a little bit crazier, you got to know what you're getting yourself into. If you're going to book a hardcore match, you have to let the venue know you're planning on doing that so you don't have problems, you know. And it's just being fair to your workers. It's being fair to the people. Like, most people, as you said, don't realize what independent workers do. Most people don't realize that, you know, they pay for wrestling school. They pay for the gas to go there. They pay for their own gear. You know, they have to pay for travel. And going for traveling, like, a lot of the independent wrestlers, especially on the East Coast, I don't know, as much on the West Coast, they travel as well, but especially on the East Coast, like, we're driving for, like, 3, 4, 5 hours at a time to go and perform for 10 minutes, mm-hmm. you know? And yep. It's like, each way, that's a lot on your body. It's a lot of travel. It's a lot of time, you know, and then having time to work out. And many independent wrestlers, you know, they have families. They have real jobs. You know, we have teachers. We have, you know, your checkout boy. We have your cook. We have your waitress. We have, you know, your friendly office administrator. You never know who might be an independent wrestler, you know, and they come from all areas of, you know, all areas of backgrounds, you know, people from poor families, people from wealthy families, you know, and you never know what you're going to get. And so it's really difficult, you know, even just being in independent wrestling, it's difficult because there's thousands and thousands of people who are vying for only a handful of positions. So you have to push yourself really hard. You have to work out. You have to go out and practice. You have to, you know, promote yourself and, you know, make sure people know who you are. And you have to be, you know, willing to, you know, sometimes say, okay, I'm going to do this and not get a paycheck because it's going to help my career. Or I'm going to do this because I might get other connections out of this. And that's, you know, that's an issue as well, because some people get into wrestling thinking they're going to make money off of it. And if you're getting into wrestling to think it's going to be a job that you're going to make money off, you're getting into it for the wrong reason. You actually have to love this sport to be a part of it, you know. And granted, everyone who gets in the ring is not going to be a great wrestler. I am not a great wrestler, you know, and that's why I try as much as I can not to put myself into a position that's going to put me into a bad place, because it's all about being honest, whether you're a promoter, whether you're a wrestler, you know, honesty is what's going to help you. And that's why some of these promotions have been around as long as they have, because they treat their workers well, they treat their fans well, they're honest with their sponsors, they're honest with their, you know, their money marks or whoever they want to call them, the people behind it who put the money into this, because for every wrestling show you see, somebody's hard-earned cash is going in to fund that.
Being you've covered wrestling for since 97 now, obviously met a lot of wrestlers. I know a lot of wrestlers, you know, that I communicate with, and I know a lot of them, you have that 9-to-5 job where they work Monday through Friday, and then Saturday, you know, they're going to the wrestling show. They're driving, as you said, 4 or 5 hours. They're wrestling. They're at the show. You get your 10 minutes. You get your money, and then you get back in your car, and you drive home. You go back 4 or 5 hours because you can't afford a hotel, so you go to get back in your car and you go to the next, either you go to the next venue or you drive back home. And then the next day you start the same process over again, where you get up and then you go to the next show and then you drive all the way back. Or, you know, a lot of these guys carpool. There's four or five people in a car, you know, to save a few dollars with your gasoline. So, yeah, I just think that'd be an excellent documentary to kind of follow independent wrestlers around. And then also I was thinking, as you were talking about independent promoters as well, there's people that I've come in contact with over the years. So many of them I see are just like wrestling fans that really just are wrestling marks that just want to run a show so they can say, hey, I promoted this guy at my show and I promoted this. You know, I know I'm going to take a beating on this show. It's not going to make any money because I don't know how to promote a show. I don't know how to I don't know how to run ads. I don't know how to get the word out. I don't know how to use the internet. But hey, I booked this guy. I booked this guy. He was on WWF, and now so suddenly he's at my show. So there's a lot of those wrestling marks out there that just want to promote a show to say, hey, I promoted a show and I got the Honky Tonk Man to come to my show, or whoever it is out there.
Yeah, and that's also another thing. It's like that's a big part of it, is you get these people who are like, I want to run a wrestling show. I've got money. I want to run a wrestling show. And like we saw this, a good example of that would have been MXW. And that was, what is that kid's name? I can't remember his name. I know him, and he was working with another wrestling promotion out there as well. He's a great kid, you know. And him and he worked with Gertner on it. They put together a beautiful show. They booked a lot of awesome people. I mean, it was a great experience being on those shows, but they also overbooked where they didn't pay, you know, they couldn't pay people. And then like they overbooked to the point of they booked these awesome shows, but they didn't promote them, you know, and nobody really came. You can't just expect, like, because you throw a wrestling show in an area where there's already wrestling and they do well, that you're going to do well just because you put a Facebook ad up that you have a show. If you don't have people on the ground in the area where you're doing the show, you're never going to get audience, because just by advertising online, you're not reaching the people who are your real fan base. You're just reaching people who are, you know, internet nerds. You're not going to reach the families that might be interested in coming out. That's why a lot of promotions don't succeed, because they don't go out there and reach out into the community where they're running. You know, they say, oh, I found this great place. It's 2 hours from home. We're going to run a show there. You know, and that's why it's really important to, like, if you're going to be a promoter, to be honest with people, to know what you're doing, to know what you're getting yourself into, and to not, you know, get in over your head, because it's not going to look pretty for you, and it's not going to be very nice when you have 20 indie workers pissed at you and talking about you on Facebook.
Yeah, I'm amazed when I hear about a wrestling show like the day after or a couple days after, and I see the talent they have on that show, and I'm thinking, how come I didn't know about this show? And here I am, wrestling media. I get sent press releases from all kinds of people. People would be amazed at what kind of email I get on a daily basis. And I'm thinking, where was the emails? Where was the update? Where was the press releases for this show? And they never sent one press release out. And then I've got other companies that will send you like press releases like every single day for their show. There's a show that's come up in April. I'm getting daily emails about this show. I mean, it's virtually the same press release, but they change a few things, like, oh, they've announced so and so is going to be on the show, and so they rework the press release and send it out. Just so that, you know, a stream of media is getting out there. And versus a guy who runs a show and then they have three or four really big names on their show, and I didn't even put a word out about the show because I didn't know about the show. It's not because I don't like the promoter or I didn't like the wrestlers. It's because I didn't hear about the show. And it's just amazing to me that, you know, one of the things that is lost is the actual promoting of the show. I mean, it's one thing to book your show, book your venue, book the talent, but then as a promoter, you have to promote the show. And there's so many guys out there that fail because they just don't know how to promote their shows. And it's mind-boggling, because I'm sure if they would get the word out, they could possibly make some money or break even. Or, you know, today's shows now, that, you know, they put them on DVD and people can buy the DVD. If you can't make it to the East Coast, they run a really cool East Coast show, buy the DVD, or now even, you know, internet pay-per-views as well. So it's mind-boggling. Some of the people that get involved in wrestling who could be successful, but at the same time, they're just not successful because they don't know how to promote.
Exactly. And I've seen it time and time again. You know, it's like with Connecticut Championship Wrestling, we had ticket outlets, you know, where we'd put up posters and sell tickets. you know, one of which was in a mall, which was great, you know, and we had regular ticket outlets where people knew they could go get tickets. And then we would buy, we'd spend the money and we would buy commercial time during SmackDown on, you know, local TV. Why? Because we knew if we ran a commercial during SmackDown, yeah, it might cost a few $100s, but guess what? We're going to have 600 people at our show. And we did, like, our smallest show I ever worked for them after they started to get big in 2005 was 300 people. The biggest show we had a packed house of almost 1,000. We had over 860 paid.
Wow. That's awesome.
And we didn't, like, yeah, we would have one big name per show, but honestly, like, our shows, we weren't relying on names, we were relying on local talent, and that's one of the other mistakes people make, is if you're running in an area, use your local talent, because guess what? Those people have friends, neighbors, and family in the area, and they will bring them, you know?
Yep.
And granted, they might not sell tickets out of their hand for you, but you know what? You can guarantee their friends or family are going to be in the audience that day.
Yeah, word of mouth, for sure. Especially on an independent level, on a local level, for sure. If you got local people that, as you said, you know, everybody knows these small communities. They know everybody. They know the high school kids. They were a high school athlete. They know these kids, or they have friends and family. Yeah, for sure. You know, definitely use the resources at your disposal, for sure.
When I did my first local show, it was for Gino Caruso, and I did a show in Middletown, New York, which is near where I grew up. It was at my hometown fair, and the local newspaper put an article in the paper about myself and two other local wrestlers who he was using on the show. And it was the first time I was wrestling at home in front of, like, in New York, especially in front of, like, you know, my hometown crowd. So I was really nervous, but we did okay. But what was cool, what was interesting was, you know, he always asked us to sell tickets, but you're not required to. And I only sold, like, 5 of my tickets. But I looked around in the audience, and there was, like, over 100 of my friends there, you know, and people I knew. And it was really cool, you know, to see so many people I knew coming out, you know, and to support, you know, what I had done because of the newspaper, you know, and using your media is really important. Getting in touch with your local newspapers, you know, getting in touch with your local clubs, you know, allowing one of the local clubs that has a food vending license to sell food, you know, might help you out because, you know, if you help the local little league and they get to sell food, you know, run your concession stand and make some money, guess what? Those parents are going to come and support. Those people are going to come and support, you know, and charity shows are great that way because you do get a good community base. And a lot of times the people who you're doing the charity for will sell you the tickets for you.
It's amazing to me as well. I know we're talking a lot about independent promoters and promotions, but to kind of go into the mainstream with TNA, TNA comes to mind because I think I'm on good terms with TNA, you know, in terms of media relations and everything. But at the same time, to get an interview with their talent, it's mind-boggling that a company that has had the same ratings for almost, you know, 5 or 6, like a straight line, their ratings, their straight line for, you know, pay-per-view buys, that you would think, you know, a group that runs a wrestling show that might draw the same amount of people as an independent show. A lot of times, independent shows can outdraw the TNA shows with the TNA talent, the bigger names, you know, the bigger television names. And, you know, why won't a promotion like TNA, who needs as much positive media as they can possibly get, why aren't they taking their talent and sending it to all the media outlets, all the wrestling media, and say, go out there and promote our TV show, promote our upcoming house show, promote our upcoming pay-per-views, you know, get the word out there that TNA has a good product. And yet at the same time, I'm sitting here and, you know, like I said, to get a TNA talent booked for one of my interviews, it's like mind-boggling. I used to have a hotline back in 2004, 2005. At that time, it was a different PR department. I could get interviews left and right. I get AJ Styles. I get anybody I wanted. Nowadays, it's like you have to jump through hoops, and it's like, why is it so hard? TNA needs as much good vibes as they can send out to the wrestling community. At the same time, they just don't do it, and it boggles my mind.
Yeah, it's true. Like with TNA, we've had a really hard time talking to any of the wrestlers. I know that there has been issues at times with booking wrestlers as well. From talking to some people who work for them, who I know, because as most people nowadays know, most of their talent came from the independent scene. So like, I know people there. I've worked with them on the ground. I've known them for years, you know, and to see friends of mine, like, people think that when you're on TNA, you're making a lot of money, and that's not generally true. Like, you might be making, like, $300 or $400 a week. Like, at one time, I heard the girls were only getting, like, paid $350 a week, and they had to be there, like, every, you know, they had to be the training, and then they were only getting paid for show day. And, like, that's not a lot of money. And then when you're saying that, like, you know, these people can't take the bookings that they were taking before for money because now they're under contract. They have to only do contracted bookings that are allowed through TNA, and then TNA charges like an exorbitant rate to get these people, like that no one would pay, that they're not even paying these people. I think that's kind of wrong, you know? I mean, yeah, granted, they're your talent now, you say, but treat your talent with a little more respect. They had a career before they joined you, you know? And it's like I still feel for the talent there because I feel like a lot of people weren't utilized great when they came in. Some people were, some people weren't. And, you know, it's like even like people see them and they see these people who they think are making a lot of money. But, I mean, a couple of years ago, people were talking about how Madison Rain was working at like Starbucks or something.
There are so many wrestlers I know that are bartenders. That must be like one of the common professions. And I won't mention any names, but there's a lot of wrestlers in TNA that have those type positions. They will wrestle, but you know, on the weekends or during the week when they're not wrestling, they work in restaurants. So it's very common. Yeah,
exactly. A lot of wrestlers like who don't have other jobs, the only way that they can like do anything for themselves is by merchandising, selling photos of themselves, selling, you know, the women sell ring gear in order to pay for things, you know, and it's a lot of expenses that, you know, that $300 or $400 a week really aren't going to cover. You know, when you're thinking about, like, they want you to be tan. They want your hair to be perfect. They want your clothes to be perfect. It's a lot of money, you know, and it's a constant expenditure. So people are constantly looking for other ways to make money and, like, to see what they can do. But, you know, they shouldn't have to work. And that's the same thing, like, with WWE. It's like you're looking at people. They're saying that they're independent contractors, yet they're signed to a contract. You know, they don't get insurance. You know, granted, sometimes WWE does cover some medical bills, but it's rare, you know. And it's like if you're a low man on the totem pole, your travel's not getting paid for house shows. You're paying for all of that yourself to stay in hotel rooms, and you're not making a lot of money. Like, John Cena makes a lot of money, but – you know, your Joe Blow, who just got there, isn't making that kind of money unless he's somebody's son and got signed to an awesome deal, or somebody's daughter and they got signed to an awesome deal. You know, it's just not the way people perceive it. You know, we have a serious problem in this industry with our senior wrestlers, you know, grasping at straws and having to push their bodies into doing independent shows because they don't have any money. You think a honky-tonk man still wants to wrestle? Like, granted, yes, a part of him, I'm sure, still wants to wrestle, but he's doing it because he needs money. He's not doing it because he loves to go out there and put his body through hell. He's doing it because, you know, he never invested his money properly, or he never got paid what he should have gotten paid to begin with, you know. And WWE is a multi-million dollar business. I mean, freaking Linda McMahon just spent millions of dollars on a campaign, but that campaign could have paid for healthcare for all of WWE for 2 years. Like, it's ridiculous to me.
I do not understand, and I know it's gone through the courts, I do not understand how WWE can keep its employees as independent contractors. As you said, you're basically an employee with no benefits. They book your dates. You can't work independently as an independent contractor would. If you're an independent contractor that comes to somebody's house and does work inside the house, you take your bookings yourself. If somebody down the road wants to book you, you book them. The guy at the house don't say, well, you're only going to work for me. You know, if you work out an agreement like that, that's fine. But if you're an independent contractor, you go where the work is. And at the same time, these guys are making a lot of money. They can't work on the weekends. They are, as you said, they don't get health care. And I don't know, understand how they keep that independent worker status for their employees when it's so obvious they violate independent workers' violations with how they book their talent.
Absolutely.
I don't get it.
I mean, And it's once in a while they'll bring people in, you know, they'll bring in indie workers, like when they're in a local area, and they'll use them for like bits and pieces and give them a cute little chunk of money, which is nice, you know, and I think it's great that a lot of my friends have gotten that opportunity to do that. I got to be an extra on Raw one time, which is a lot of fun, you know, but in the same aspect, it's like, you see all these people who are doing, you know, all of this hard work, putting themselves out there, traveling, putting their body on the line night after night, getting serious injuries. I mean, I'm not talking about like bruises or a broken arm. I mean, people are breaking their necks. People are breaking their backs. People are like breaking legs and tearing ligaments and putting their body through hell for like nothing. And they make, yeah, maybe they'll make $200,000 a year, but when 30,000, 40,000 of it has to go straight off the top to medical expenses, I mean, that's not good. I mean, I've been happy to see less people are roided out of their minds, you know, nowadays, but still, it's not good for the body. It's not good for, you know, it's not good for people. And nowadays, like, they change things up from what they used to. Like, people would be on the road for 3 months at a time with WWE and wouldn't be able to stop, you know. And Sunny tells a lot of stories about that. Tammy, you know, she told us stories about how when she was with them, how she would travel, you know, for days at a time, and like they'd be doing their laundry and laundromats, and, you know, they would just be bouncing from hotel to hotel. Now they give them a day or two off a week, but still, like maybe 3 days off a week, but still, I mean, it's still hell on your body. It's still hell on your pocket. It's still hell on your mind. You know, it's a lot of things that wrestlers go through to entertain you. You know, you really have to give them respect for that.
Absolutely. And we've kind of transitioned. We've gone from independent wrestling to, you know, WWE, TNA. I know you're kind of out of the loop a little bit with wrestling. You're not taking bookings or anything, but do you still watch wrestling? Do you still watch, you know, Raw, SmackDown, keep up with what's going on currently with wrestling?
Sort of. I mean, I do on occasion. I don't watch a lot of television. So when I do, like, I caught the end of the New Year's Eve Raw, I think it was, and that was like pretty gross, and I watch it here and there, like, you know, I watch it here and there, basically, whenever I catch it and it's on, but generally, I mean, I'm not a really big fan of WWE anymore. I like watching it to see people who, like, I like on TV, and people who, you know, I watched in the business forever, you know, independently, and in, you know, WWE grow, and occasionally I'll watch it, but honestly, I rather watch Lucha, because that's on TV out here in California a lot more. It's a lot more exciting. You know, it's a lot more realistic. And it's just, WWE is just, it feels so contrived. It feels like it's same matches over and over and over and over again. And honestly, I'm sick of seeing them. I wish they'd bring jobbers back.
Yeah, it's amazing to me how many people I talk to in wrestling that either worked for WWE or just been fans of WWE all these years, that very few actually watch WWE on a weekly basis anymore. Some people might say, yeah, I'll turn it on occasionally, you'll see one of my friends or somebody like that. But people in the business that I talk to, you know, former wrestlers, former managers, promoters, very few of them say they actually watch WWE on a weekly basis. And I think as we've seen the, you know, the ratings decline for WWE over the years, it's just not the same WWE anymore. And I really think the main difference is the talent. I mean, this is a talent-driven business. People pay to see the talent. And unfortunately, WWE and really TNA are not producing the talent that people want to see. You know, The Rock really is gone. Steve Austin is really gone. You know, DX is gone. And they've really not replaced those stars. You know, Mick Foley's not involved, really not involved very much anymore with wrestling. And they're just not evolving the new stars into those new superhero-type characters. You kind of sense the same thing?
I totally do, because, you know, from watching who WWE and TNA have signed over the past, like, let's say 5 years, a lot of these workers, like, you know, I've worked with and I've been on shows with and I've seen, and they missed the ball on a lot of these people. Like, they picked up some of these independent workers, like, after they were really, like, you know, after their time in a lot of ways, like, they should have gotten these guys when they were younger. They should let them be who they are. They shouldn't over, you know, I mean, it seems like they just try to over, like, they change everybody to what they want them to be rather than letting them be who they are. And it just You know, I mean, granted, I understand they want everyone to have a similar work rate, but when everybody's doing the same moves and it's the same thing over and over and over again, I mean, when you watch Raw for 4 weeks in a row and it's the same fucking people, you know, the same people over and over again wrestling, like, there's only so much you want to watch of it. It's not interesting anymore. You know, they're not bringing in new talent. They're not, you know, they're just recycling old talent. I mean, honestly, it's like I tell my friends, you know, with TNA, if Hulk Hogan would have died 10 years ago, he'd still be everybody's hero, you know, and now he's just a caricature of himself. Like, you can't even take him seriously anymore. And it's like, I see this, like, they keep recycling, like, old superstars. Like, granted, I love seeing Steve Austin on TV, but we know he can't wrestle anymore, you know, because of his injuries and things that have happened to him anymore. You know, The Rock, he was great for them, but he started doing movies and making more money doing that and realizing that it's more worth it for him to do movies than put his body on the line every night, you know, and... You know, you're going to see that. Like, people, after a while, they're going to just get fed up with it, and they're not going to want to go back. And that's why you talk to former talent from WWE. Some of them are like, oh, I would do anything to get my job back. And others are like, ah, screw that. I'm happier without it. Because they feel like they've been used and abused. And as I said before, it's just not right. I mean, they're not grooming talent properly. They choose people based on looks. They choose people based on certain criteria, but then they don't let those people perform. Like, you see that with Bryan Danielson. You know, they're calling him, what, Daniel Bryan on TV. And granted, he's doing a lot of cool stuff in the ring, and I really love seeing him on TV, but knowing what he was before he got to WWE, seeing him in Ring of Honor, seeing him in Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, seeing him in other promotions, I know what he's capable of, and I don't feel that they utilize him to his full capacity. I don't feel that they ever utilized CM Punk, you know, properly when they first got him. Granted, he became a huge star. Why? Because CM Punk already had a massive following on the independent scene, you know, and granted, like, they got Chris Hero, they got Claudio, you know, I see Claudio on TV, it makes me super happy, but at the same time, I feel like, you know, they're not, they picked him up late, and they're not fully utilizing him, and they're not letting him be the amazing big man I've seen on the independent scene, that I've seen in Chikara. I've seen him do incredible things, yet WWE doesn't allow people to do those things. They want them to do their watered-down, generic version of wrestling entertainment, and it's, honestly, it's just become boring.
Yeah, so many people, recent election of Linda McMahon, the second senatorial campaign she ran, and there were so many wrestling fans that said, well, I hope she loses because maybe they'll get rid of the PG rating. And I, so many people have said that to me and put that on the comments on wrestling boards and things, and even our board. But at the same time, to me, it's not the PG rating. And so many people were rooting that Linda would lose so they would go back to the more risque style, you know, the Attitude Era. But to me, I mean, I look back to the 80s, you know, when we started watching wrestling with Hulk Hogan and Roddy Piper, Captain Lou. I mean, wrestling was a cartoon. It was like a G-rated show. It was a cartoon. They had actually had a cartoon back in the day.
Hulk Hogan's Rockin' Wrestling. Yes, I remember.
I mean, WrestleMania back in the day, and it was on NBC. I mean, Saturday Night's Main Event was like you couldn't miss those shows, and it was all G-rated. And so many people are like, well, they can't do this PG thing anymore because we've progressed from there. And it's, hey, they made a lot of money when they just were G-rated. To me, what made that era so great was the talent. I mean, you go back to those shows, they most all were job enhancement guys, jobber matches to a larger degree. And yet that's how they build up these stars. You know, Hulk Hogan at that time, Randy Savage, Tito Santana, a Honky Tonk Manager, on and on and on. And today, for the wrestling show now, they just want to put, you know, a name versus a name and not necessarily advance a guy and put somebody over strong and build him up. That this is kind of the era we live in. And it's too bad because even though it was job enhancement guys or jobber guys, you got the talent over. People wanted to see the talent and people want to pay for the talent. Nowadays, it's just so much. I think another thing is this oversaturation of wrestling. There is so much on. I mean, back in the day, you know, WWE superstars on a Saturday morning, you couldn't miss it because that's all you could really see there during the week. And now it's Raw, it's SmackDown, it's Impact, ROH, et cetera, you know. And Saturday mornings now they got a show, and et cetera. It's just so much wrestling, and it's not good wrestling. It's just a lot of wrestling, but not necessarily the wrestling that people want to see.
No, and I agree with that completely. Like, I'd like to see them bring in more independent people as jobbers locally, you know. And one of the things is, like, when I was a kid, like, when wrestling first started coming, like, I remember watching the very first WrestleMania. I was only allowed to watch it because my grandparents took me to their friend's house who got it on closed caption television. They had some money. You know, they're having an adult party, and my grandparents were like, she's a big wrestling fan. Can we please bring her? We promise she'll be quiet. She'll just sit in front of the TV. And I did, you know, but I remember it was a big thing, pay-per-views, back then. There was a big 3 to 4 month build-up for pay-per-views. There wasn't a monthly pay-per-view. It was like a build-up, and like those guys wouldn't meet in the ring, or if they did, it would only be for like a few seconds. You know, it wouldn't be like match after match after match leading up to a match at a pay-per-view. I mean, that's boring to me. If I've seen these guys wrestle 9 times on Raw, why am I going to want to pay $50 to get a pay-per-view? It's just not you know, something that seems feasible to me. And like having a pay-per-view every month, it's watered down the pay-per-views and makes them less exciting, you know. And when you have like 9 pay-per-views a month, because you have WWE pay-per-views, you have TNA pay-per-views, you have Ring of Honor pay-per-views, you have Chikara pay-per-views, you have, you know, whatever pay-per-views there might be, it's like it's overwhelming to the audience. I mean, not everybody can afford to spend $50 or $60 to watch a pay-per-view, you know, and nor do people really want to watch it when they've seen that match 9 times. It's boring. And I've watched, you know, WWE keeps destroying their talent. They keep jobbing out their good guys. You know, like seeing people like Rey Mysterio get beat like 9 times in a row makes me really sad, because Rey Mysterio is like one of the best wrestlers they have, especially via, you know, versus his size versus other guys. He's amazing. And then they, all of a sudden, you know, oh, well, we're not going to push Ray this week. We're just going to, you know, slap him down and get this new guy over. That's not fair to the talent they already have. They need to find a better way to, like, you know, show their talent without, like, killing their talent at the same time. And, you know, rotating people and doing different things, because like you say about the PG rating, people want to lose it. But you know what? You lose the PG rating, you lose your whole next generation of wrestling fans. Because
and a lot of business too. Because I mean, nowadays with a PG rating, you can get John Cena party equipment for your kids' party. They get John Cena plates and John Cena hats, and that's like a whole new revenue stream for them right now.
Well, if you go to wrestling events, you'll see more than 50% of the crowd is children, and most of the stuff that's sold is like to kids, you know? So, I mean, that's still your main market. I mean, granted, there's lots of adults who like wrestling, but the kids are still your number one market. That's where you're going to build your future generations of fan bases. And if the kids can't get it, or if the kids, you know, can't watch it because it's too like sexually based, then it's not fair, you know. It's not fair to your future generations, because you're just not going to have them. And if they're going to do multiple TV shows, maybe they should think about that. They should change things up. Make a show that's on at 11 o'clock at night that's more adult oriented. Make other shows that are more kid friendly. Make storylines that are easier for the kids to understand, you know, and follow, you know. And stop going against, like, when you have storylines, stop treating your wrestling fans like they're morons, because you know what? We follow these wrestlers. We know who they are. Just because you change their name 3 months later doesn't mean that that guy's still not the same guy. You know, we still see him. We still know who he is, you know. Do something. Develop your characters better, you know. Develop your characters. Make a heel turn make sense. Don't make someone come out the next day as a bad guy when they were always a good guy. It doesn't make sense, and you're losing fans because of it. Every time you do something that doesn't make sense or seems contrived, people see it, and they just don't want to do it anymore. And that's why I see, like, so many people who do discover indie wrestling love it, because they see that, like, workers get a little more freedom in what they're doing. There's, you know, sometimes more freedom in the storylines. You know, the storylines, you know, if they're smart, like, the independent storylines will travel from promotion to promotion a little bit, you know, if the promoters are willing to do that. But that's also another problem we face in independence is, you know, you're a major heel at one promotion, the next town over, they want you to be the fan favorite. And, you know, it's letting people, it's character control. And, you know, having a character, it's really important, because, you know, as we said, with 80s wrestlers, that was the thing. It was their character that got everybody hooked. because before that, there were always wrestling fans. But until people started developing real character, there wasn't much to divide it from boxing.
I just see, like, I see Alex Riley. And I don't mean to pick on Alex Riley, but he's a generic wrestler to me. There's nothing that grips me. Like, why would I be an Alex Riley fan? And I think he's a good wrestler. But on the flip side, when he's on the television, why would I be an Alex Riley fan? It's like they have so many characters like Alex. And I don't mean to pick on Alex, but just they just have a name. They have a look, but that's really about it. They're not being pushed. They don't have interesting storylines. They don't have interesting characters. There's no managers anymore. Remember back in the day when there used to be managers that could help people get over? There's just nothing. It's just they take a character, they put them on television, and we're just supposed to get behind them. And it's just mind-boggling that they have – I mean, if you go to the WWE roster, just look it over. They have so many wrestlers like, said, Alex Riley. And I think that's one of the reasons their fan base is kind of going downhill in terms of the ratings, in terms of pay-per-view revenues. And I know people always argue with me and say, well, WWE's making more money than they ever have. It doesn't mean the wrestling product is good. And if they continue in this path, they keep in this path, eventually that business will go down. I mean, why they make so much money, more money now than they did, say, in the 90s and the 80s, they have such more revenue streams. I mean, they have the DVDs. You have party equipment, as I was talking about. You have video games. You have action figures, et cetera. And that's one of the reasons, I think, too, they would stay with PG, because they can advertise their action rings on Nickelodeon during the day and make money that way. So I just think...
Oh, yeah. I remember when the rubber figures came out in the 80s, the big size ones, you know, the bouncy ones, and the ring came out. That year for Christmas, that's all we wanted for Christmas. My cousin got the ring. I got some wrestlers. She got some wrestlers. The wrestlers were much more interesting than the Barbie dolls that year, I'll tell you that. So, I mean, that, and it's still, like, I go to, you know, you go to used toy stores. Like, I was at a used toy store a couple weeks ago with one of my friends, and they had a huge bin of wrestling figures, and I was like, just off the top, I found four RVDs, so I posed them together. I was like, look, RVD, 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 you know, and people are, like, picking up, my friend's picking up the wrestlers. He's like, who's this guy? Who's that guy? You know, and I'm telling him, and he's like, I don't even know who half these people are anymore. You know, and that's the thing. The kids can tell you every wrestler. They know who they are. They know about them. They'll tell you why they like them. They'll tell you why they hate them, or they'll tell you why they're boring.
Exactly. Now, I want to segue into something totally off the topic of wrestling, because we've really covered wrestling pretty well here in the last 20 minutes or so, you know, really breaking down some of the flaws with wrestling. I think the reason that wrestling's declined over the years, I think the pay-per-view numbers bear that out. We're seeing TNA has actually eliminated a couple pay-per-views for the year. Hopefully they eliminate a few more pay-per-views. We'd love to see WWE eliminate a few pay-per-views. But you were talking a little bit before about insulting your intelligence, and we kind of get that a lot with wrestling, where they insult your intelligence. And it's not just wrestling. I think it's just the media in general. They insult your intelligence. And I know, Liz, when I talk to other people about kind of what's really going on in the world, you know, with Fast and Furious, with TSA, with drones, with chemtrails. And, you know, I'll talk to somebody and they'll look at me like, you know, what are you talking about? You know, this can't be real, because if it was real, the media would definitely tell us. You know, they don't say that on the news, so it can't be real. So I know you and I probably share the same frustration. Obviously, we talk about the wrestling frustration, but the frustration in general with people and the media out there, that we have grown up now with NBC and CBS and Fox News and CNN. If, you know, if you're liberal, you're going to watch CNN. If you're conservative, you're going to watch Fox News. And you think you're getting the truth. You think you're getting what's really going on in the world. And then you wake up one day and you realize that, you know, the media is corporate news. They tell you what they want from a corporate perspective. Or CNN, I think, largely is run by the Pentagon. Whatever the Pentagon wants to put out, they put it on CNN. So I think you and I both feel that frustration that the media insults your intelligence, and a lot of people go along with it, because if something isn't legit, then it's got to be on the news, right, Liz?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and that goes to, like, to say, like, the movie Idiocracy isn't just a movie. It's a very, very scary picture of our future, as far as I'm concerned. You know, TV is called programming for a reason. All of the major networks and even the minor networks are all all of the airspace is owned by corporations. Those corporations have interests to protect. Those corporations are also linked to all of the banks, which also have interests to protect. So these news outlets, they have to protect the interests of their bosses first and foremost. So what we get is a watered-down version of somebody's truth, not necessarily the truth, but somebody's truth or what somebody wants to be perceived as the truth. And for the past, since 2008 or so, I've been writing blogs for years about 9/11. I'd write a yearly blog about America needing to wake up, and I really tried to stay non-political throughout my wrestling. You know, the past 9 years I've been involved in wrestling, I really hadn't talked too much about my politics except for with people who agree with me, you know, because I don't want to start the fight. And in wrestling, there's a lot of conservative people. So, you know, I just never wanted to start the fight. And in 2010, I started with Truth is Scary, which is truthisscary.com. It's an alternative news site. And what we do is we surf the internet looking for alternative news sources to provide people with, you know, sources of information that don't come from corporate agendas and that show more of what's going on in the world. Another thing we do is we interview celebrities. We've interviewed wrestlers, rappers, other celebrities, and ask them, you know, off-the-cuff questions that they wouldn't be asked in any other interview, you know, questions that people consider conspiracy theories. But with every conspiracy theory, there's truth behind it. So you need to look and try to break these things down for yourself. And instead of listening to people telling you what you should believe, you should start opening your eyes and researching things and find out what you believe for yourself.
Yeah, I like the Truth is Scary website. In fact, we linked to some of the videos that you put out, Brian Kendrick's video, Rob Van Dam's video. And then, you know, I saw those videos and they drew me to those guys. I wanted to interview Rob Van Dam again, and I wanted to interview Brian Kendrick for the first time because you were talking about things that are, I guess, not – if it's not mainstream, then it's considered a conspiracy. You know, we use the conspiracy label to – I mean, a conspiracy is only anything that goes against the mainstream viewpoint or the official story, I guess you would say. And
Just so you know, those interviews are about like 7 minutes long online. Both of those interviews were over 3 hours long in person. They were insane. And Brian is so intense. Like, he is amazing. Like, listening to him talk, I was just, like, spellbound listening to him talk. It was, like, the first time I'd met him in person. And, you know, he knows a lot. And he looks into a lot of this stuff. And so does RVD. RVD is huge into this. And getting to interview him about these topics was, like, a huge thing to me because I've always looked up to RVD since his days in ECW. So, you know, being able to interview him about topics I care about, too, and seeing that, like, some of the people who are entertainers are awake and do know what's going on is kind of a relief to me.
Yeah, it's too bad that more of the mainstream people, the celebrities, don't start speaking out because, you know, we are going into a dangerous period here. We're going to see with, I guess in your state, with Feinstein there, she's going after the gun ban. She's going to introduce this bill in the Senate. And, yeah, I knew you'd be a big fan of hers, you know, pushing this agenda. And obviously, going back to the media, you know, they push this agenda. I mean, like, for example, global warming, it's GE pushes this agenda because obviously they benefit from the global warming carbon taxes. They couldn't pass it through the House and the Senate, so you know, Obama sends an executive order through the EPA to make carbon emissions a pollutant. They call, you know, carbon a pollutant. So obviously GE benefits by that. So obviously they're going to push the global warming agenda. And obviously we've seen through numerous studies that the, you know, global warming numbers have been cooked, that there really is no global warming. It's not definitely not man-made. It's climate change. Climate change is natural. It's not because we're breathing. It's not because my dog farts. You know, this is the way life is, and it's just, you know, you see that
kind
more.
Of a cross between it. I think there is global warming because of emissions and stuff. I mean, living in California, you see the smog that hangs over Los Angeles, and it's pretty gross. And that's due to the amount of cars and stuff. And granted, I think it really does have something to do with it, but, you know, the climate change is something that has always happened on this planet and always will. I mean, we have something called a 100-year floodplain where, you know, like I studied land use quite a bit because I used to work at a building and zoning office. So so I understand like land maps and things such as that. And I learned when I was doing water conservation issues, I learned about, you know, 100-year floodplains. Now, in most places in this country, a lot of these floodplains in the past 10 to 15 years have been developed, or even before that, since the 50s, they've been developed. And they're 100-year floodplains where, like, you know, they flood every 100 years or so. And, like, now people's houses are in the way. And the only reason there are people's houses in the way is because that benefited those corporations, those contractors, the people selling these things, people selling insurance, people selling wood, people selling cement, it benefits all of them. So they're going to allow these things to happen because what's going to happen is there's going to be a disaster and then it's going to benefit them again, you know, and they're not being honest with people and people don't, you know, it's not like it used to be. People don't do research into what they're buying. People don't do research into like where they're living, you know, people don't do research into, you know, what's really going on around them, because if you did, you would know, you know, Manhattan used to be a swamp and they just filled it in with garbage to build the lower end of Manhattan. You know, you would know that like other places that they've built homes and they've built beaches weren't beaches, and that, you know, those areas have historically always flooded, you know, from in time shifts. So if you're going to ignore history, you're bound to like deal with the consequences of it, you know.
Yeah, I'm talking about the global warming they push. You know, the polar bears are dying, the sea levels are rising. You know, Al Gore, you know, he stands to make a lot of money from carbon trade and carbon emissions. So that obviously,
all of these people do.
Yeah, and then, you know, I don't know if you saw it. I guess it was kind of one of those footnotes. You know, Al Gore had Current Television, and who bought Current Television? Al Jazeera bought Current Television. Yeah, so not only have we have corporations now, we have foreign entities coming in and, you know, owning.
We have a lot of foreign entities, and what's weird is like, okay, you look at the news. Like, I watch a lot of different news. I follow Al Jazeera because why? Al Jazeera reports on things that like we're not going to see here in the United States news. They're just not going to tell us, you know, period. And then I also follow RT News, which is Russia Today. And the thing about Russia Today is they do like amazing coverage of things. Like, I'm involved in Occupy LA and have been since October 1st, 2011. And they cover us in the most truthful way I've seen yet as far as, you know, mainstream media coverage of us. But they won't cover what's going on at home in Russia. You know, it's the same thing as our media. Like, they protect their interests. And it's like we're seeing more and more. We see this with Press TV, which is the Iranian TV network. You know, we see it with other news outlets where you'll see truth in news in other places, but they're not going to be truthful about their own news still. So it's definitely a conundrum because you really don't know who to trust. So, like, what I do is I read news from all sorts of various sources, and then I kind of put my own thoughts into it, and I try to critically think about like the information that's putting out in front of me and try to gain the truth from those, because it's very difficult, especially since most of these news sources all arrive from the same source, which is usually AP News.
Right. And I just wonder, what was your thoughts with the Sandy Hook shooting? Because I remember, and I talked about some on the show I just did about all the inconsistencies in stories that, you know, originally the shooter's mom worked at the school, and then she didn't. And then I heard one story that he shot his dad and then went to school. And then we had the story that Ryan was the shooter and was actually Adam. And then at one time, I remember Adam was a father of one of the kids at the school, and et cetera. We heard about, you know, inconsistencies with the weapons used. There was a guy in the forest and there wasn't a guy in the forest. Just what was your overall thoughts and kind of following that story?
Well, like, with following that story and following the Aurora shooting and all the other random, like, violent gun things that have gone on, you know, in the past, like, few months, it seems like people are losing their critical thinking skills, because I see the news constantly reporting things, and then something they used to do would be retract the statements that they made that were false. publicly. Now they do it more privately on their websites or on their newspapers, and they do it in tiny little print where they redact things, but you don't really even know they redacted them. There was a lot of misinformation. There was a lot of cross-information. There's been a lot of things like the fact that the Aurora shooting suspect's father and Adam Lanza's father were both scheduled to testify at the Liber scandal hearings, you know, so it makes you wonder what was really going on behind it, because, like, the news kept changing their story, and, like, when it first started to break, you know, I was online talking with other people who also do the same thing I do and aggregate news, and people wanted to post it, and I said, don't post it yet, because, you know, we don't know if this Ryan Lanza kid did it, and then it came out that it was Adam Lanza, and then as the days broke, then it was, oh, well, the mother wasn't there at the time. Then it was, oh, well, the mother was never a teacher here. You know, oh, the mother, you know, then they're saying, oh, well, the mother was, you know, ready for the end of times, and she was a prepper, and we got to investigate preppers. And honestly, it all seemed too contrived to me, and it still does. It seems like, you know, seeing these pictures that are coming out where it's showing people who are supposed to be on separate sides of the country and are supposed to be a completely different person, showing people in pictures, you're wondering what's going on. You're seeing pictures of these shooters before and after who don't even look like the same person. So you have to question what of this is true. And, I mean, after 9/11, that was a real big wake-up call with the media constantly lying and, like, saying one thing and then saying another. Oh, the building is about to collapse. Or, oh, this building did collapse, and it's standing right behind you. I mean, come on. You know, it's like, wake up, America. They're lying to you. They're paid. The people on TV, they're not journalists. They're talking heads. They're just actors who are paid to pretend. They're being paid to tell you a story, and that's all it is. It's not real. And when people start realizing this and waking up, they'll start looking for themselves. But a lot of that is going to take shutting off the TV and going outside.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. There's a lot of great alternative news outlets out there. The Drudge Report comes to mind. Almost all the British newspapers, they seem to take our stories and report it with more accuracy than the U.S. media, I guess you would say. Even though, obviously, as you said, the U.S. media, foreign interests, foreign corporations that run these news outlets, and obviously they put their own spin on things, and they purposely report things and purposely don't report things that benefit them and etc. But I know one of the areas that you had just recently did a Ustream on, and I definitely encourage people to check out your Ustream, is that you did something on smart meters. And I think that's a topic that you tell somebody, a smart meter, like, what's a smart meter? I guess it's smart, right? It's a smart meter. And then, you know, they don't realize the health hazards with a smart meter. And tell us really what the purpose of a smart meter is, and why should we be concerned about it?
Okay, so everyone who has utilities has, like, a meter outside of the house that either gauges their electric, their gas, or water, or both, or all of them. And historically, they've sent out a meter reader. That person goes out and looks at the meter. And now, we know electric companies are scandalous, and they say they read your meter once a month, and they don't. You know, and you know this through looking at your electric bill and saying, well, I wasn't even home this month. How was it $400 again? You know, so what they said that they wanted to do was, they want to put this, they're putting in this grid across the entire world. It's a smart meter grid. Smart meters are digital meters that work through microwaves. And what they do is they're supposed to talk to each other and then send signals back to like a main grid. But they're not only installing them in cities, they're installing them in rural areas where they actually have, like, they serve absolutely no purpose whatsoever, because they won't actually work because they're that far off the grid currently. So what's happening is these electromagnetic pulses that come out of the machine, it's already been proven that they affect people's health. They affect people's memory. They affect people's sleep patterns. They affect people's mental health, physical health. They cause physical problems. And they don't care. These studies have already been done. They already have the proof that this happens. They don't care. They're installing them in people's homes. They're not telling them. Now, if you want to say that you don't want one, they're charging you to remove that, even though they installed it legally without, you know, telling you that they were going to. They charge you to remove it, and then they charge you a monthly fee to keep it off of your property. So here in California and all across the country, if not the world, there's people who are really being affected by this, who are starting to tell the utility companies no. We had a commission hearing where only one of the judges on the commission, out of four of them who were supposed to be there, only one bothered to show up. The others couldn't even bother to show up. and over 100 residents came out, you know, in support to ban these smart meters because the health effects, people are getting pushed out of their house. And, you know, it's like a friend of mine right now, she has to sell her house. She's traveling islands trying to find a place where she can go that's going to be off-grid. She went to Hawaii, and it was terrible. She's in another place right now, and, you know, even they're on the grid. You know, and it's getting harder and harder to find places that are going to be off-grid. And these people who suffer from these psychological and physical ailments aren't going to be able to get away from it. And not to mention the homeowners and the renters who are suffering from this. Businesses can't opt out. So this is going to also affect everybody, like everyone who is unhoused in this country. You know, many of them are unhoused for physical and mental reasons already. Many of them are soldiers who have PTSD and have other issues and can't function and are very sensitive to this stuff already. Living on the streets, they won't be able to get away from it because the areas in which they live are all areas, especially here in LA with Skid Row, the entire area is a business district. And the reason they live there is that's where all of the, you know, resources for the unhoused are in the area. And what people don't realize is we have over 18,000 people living on Skid Row, you know, here in LA, because it's one of the homeless capitals in the United States. You know, those people are going to get affected. People are going to get affected in ways that they don't even realize it's affecting them, and the electric companies aren't being honest or transparent and telling people what these things are doing, and it's causing another problem, and that's just another way the corporations are lying to people and taking advantage of the world populace.
Now, Liz, you know, if that was true, the media would tell you that. You must be making this stuff up, right?
Well, the media does tell you that. Like, you know, the right media. You have to stop listening to the mainstream media. You know, like, I'm the media. And I have great examples of the media lying because one of the things that I do, I'm a streamer. I go out and I film protests and I film other newsworthy events. And it's unbroken. It's not edited. You see whatever's happening live. You can go back and look at it later, you know, and watch it again and see what really happened, uncut, unedited, you know, and see for yourself what happened. A good example, one good example was after the LA Kings won. We heard the fans were out in the streets. So I was downtown. I ran down there to see what was going on. A group of people from Occupy LA had headed down there. We had pamphlets and stuff that they were handing out. All we were doing was standing on a street corner. We weren't doing anything wrong. The fans weren't doing anything wrong. They were celebrating. The cops were shoving fans off of the sidewalk with their batons to make them move along faster and to get them out of the area of the Staples Center. Every time the cops started shoving people, more and more people would start screaming to the police and would, you know, start standing there and yelling at them. And these weren't, you know, the activists. The activists were actually mostly standing there quietly. These were the people, the fans who had paid to go to the Kings game or paid to be in the bars and were hanging out and were celebrating and happy. They weren't doing anything wrong. They weren't breaking anything, right? And the cops just kept getting more and more aggro. They were hitting people. They were threatening people. And then finally, like, the people just kind of seemed to get sick of it, and the cops were screaming at them, and they all went into the street, and they said, "What?" You know, and it was really like a weird, situation because you see this one, at this one point, a city bus, like, pulls up into the middle of the intersection and just stops. And the entire crowd of people went up, and they were just, like, you know, like, pounding on the bus, not to break windows or anything, but, like, just, like, celebrating and saying, yay, you know, and stuff like that. As soon as the bus pulled away, the cops shot a flash grenade at us, and, like, the entire crowd went running. Then they started shooting less lethal rounds into the crowd and chasing people on horseback, and I got part of it. And because of that, like, this one guy, like, I watched him get shot and start knocking over, and then other people started doing it. Why? Because, like, the cops were shooting at people. The same thing happened to Art Walk. They tried to blame Occupy LA for starting a riot when, in fact, Occupy LA really wasn't even there at the point. There was a few of us media people there and a few others still there. You know, we had a chalk protest, and they had arrested 7 people for chalking on the streets because, you know, chalk is vandalism. Sidewalk chalk is vandalism. Make sure you all know that. Crayola sidewalk chalk is vandalism, according to LAPD. So they said people were defacing property. They violently arrested people. And all of a sudden they geared up with, like, like 100 motorcycles and like cop cars everywhere. And like a bunch of people ran into the intersection to see what was going on. They were like, what the hell is going on? And we were telling people, get out of the street. You know, you don't want to do this. Like people, like what happened? And we told people, people got arrested for chalking. And, you know, people were pissed because they thought it was bullshit. And this girl picked up a piece of chalk and she drew a smiling, happy face stick figure. And wrote something like, you know, like, why can't we all love or something like that. The cops went over. They picked, she was about my size. She was about 5'2". They picked her up, slammed her to the ground, picked her up again and slammed her back to the ground. Her brother ran over to help her. Some people grabbed him so he wouldn't get arrested too. And then, like, once they did that, the entire crowd went nuts. These people weren't activists. These people were just people downtown who were getting shoved around by the cops. Because the cops wanted to move people through faster and were shoving people off the sidewalk. You know, people wearing Armani business clothes, you know, nice dressed people, normal members of LA. And then they tried to blame it all on us and say it was our fault. They shot people with less lethal rounds. Two people got shot in the face. One kid got shot in the chest like 3 times and in the back. You know, people who were just walking to the store who had nothing to do with this. They tear gassed us, they flash grenaded us, they chased us around the city, and then they came out on TV and said we started all of this. Meanwhile, we were having a fundraiser down the street, and there was only about 10 of us who were still out there at the time. And my video shows what happened. We had to go around, you know, and then they tried to, the mainstream media said that the businesses were all against us. We went around and interviewed all of the businesses. We have video of it, and none of the businesses said we affect them at all. You know, because we don't. We don't bother people. We don't break shit. We don't cause trouble. Yeah, we might take the streets and snarl traffic sometimes to wake people up, but we've never, you know, done anything that, you know, puts people in danger, you know. And if anything, the cops are the people who are constantly putting people in danger. They're constantly going after people and attacking people. And that's where the accountability needs to be. We give these people guns to protect us. They don't protect and serve us. They protect and serve the banks and the corporations. And, you know, with J.P. Morgan and Chase and others giving police departments millions of dollars, I mean, something's got to give. Some people need to start waking up that these police are not there to protect your rights. They're there to protect the rich. They're there to protect the banks and the corporations, not you. You're the problem in their eyes, and they're not going to see that. You know, they're brainwashed into thinking everybody is bad, and it's just not the case. And I see this over and over again, you know, where people are getting injured and brutalized, and, you know, black and brown people are being completely prejudiced against, you know, in any area, just for the color of their skin, walking home from work, you know, getting shot by the cops, you know, because they looked like somebody, they said, you know, or because they refused to stop and talk to the cop. That's your right. You don't have to talk to them unless they're detaining you to arrest you, you know. And that's the thing. It's like, we've allowed our country and our world to start becoming a police state in which we just do whatever they say because of fear. And it's not right. And mainstream media keeps telling you to be scared of your neighbors, and people keep listening. So it's time to say, you know, we're not going to listen to these liars anymore.
That's why I like you so much, because not only do you talk about these issues, you actually do something about it. You demonstrate, you get out and film, you interview people, you're active. As I said at the beginning, you're a truth crusader. You're out there to expose the truth rather than, you know, hiding behind, as the media does, hide behind the corporations that they're protecting. So, and that's why, like I said, that's why I like Liz Savage so much. And I'm glad we finally got a chance to hook up. We've been trying to hook up with Liz. And now that we've talked in depth about your wrestling background, I want to invite you back to do more with what you're currently doing, your truth crusading, because I know you've woken up a lot of people. I know from just me talking on my show, I've woken up some people. People email me and said, oh, I never thought of it that way. Yeah, that's interesting. Or maybe I'll look into that. Or as you said, you know, do your own research. You know, find out. Don't just believe everything somebody tells you, your father tells you, your pastor tells you, your neighbor tells you. But, you know, do your own research. Find out if what you're being told is true or not. You know, don't believe your local TV station. Don't believe the radio. Don't believe the internet. You know, as much as I'm, you know, internet person, internet website, there's a lot of BS on the internet out there. So obviously we've well documented NBC, CBS, CNN, and et cetera. So You know, go out there and find the alternative news site. Alex Jones does a TV show, a radio show, has InfoWars, there's Drudge Report, there's Truth is Scary. There are other sources of information out there that are not bought and paid for by
Mother
Jones Megabank.
Is a great one.
Another one, exactly, yeah. So, you know, Liz, we're going to definitely invite you back. I think we're going to start a new segment, call it The Savage Truth, and we'll just have you on, and we'll just talk about what's really going on, and, you know, me and you talking, maybe we can wake up some people, because I think if we don't wake people up, if people don't wake up, you know, we're in a lot of trouble, because we're under a lot of tyranny right now. You know, we see with TSA, we're going after the guns, they put fluoride in our water, they put all these preservatives in our foods.
Don't forget the smart NDAA.
The NDAA, we can be arrested at any time with no trial, no lawyers.
H.R. 341, which is awesome. H.R. 341, which is a lot of people don't know about, it's an executive order signed by the president, which basically makes all politicians celebrities in a way, which means we can no longer, protesters and people with issues with politicians can no longer approach or speak to them. They need to stay away from them in free speech zones and can be indefinitely detained as terrorists if they say something or do something that people don't like. You know, you're no longer the public, and you no longer have the right to, you know, petition your government for things you no longer like, because if you do, they'll just ban you from going to that building.
Yeah, you know, the government that loves you, that wants to give you Obamacare and welfare and et cetera, all the benefits, your Social Security, is the same government that, as you said, NDAA, Fast and Furious, they ship guns to Mexico, the insider trade, they're shutting down power plants, you know, chemtrail us, GMO, fluoride, vaccines. Another one, you know, flu vaccines. You know, this is the flu season. Don't get a flu vaccine.
Don't
fall
shot.
For that.
Yeah,
don't get any shot.
Once I got so sick when I got the flu shot, it was worse than having the flu. And you know, when I started studying it, and the flu vaccines, they're really not as safe as they claim they are. And a lot of people who get these flu vaccines die.
Get very sick. Exactly.
You know, because most of the people who get them are the elderly. So when the elderly get sick, they're better off without the vaccine, because the vaccine kills them.
Well, I see more and more studies about the kids' vaccines, the mumps.
Yes.
That the more the kids that are vaccinated take the vaccine for these particular ailments, they have a higher risk of getting the ailments because they took the vaccines. So they don't protect you. I think it's a flu shot is what increases your or decreases your immunity by 50%. It actually increases your chance of getting the flu, and it actually gives you a chance increases your chances of Alzheimer's disease, which is something you can look up as well. I think the Canadian study on that as well. So. Yeah. This, as I said, this government that has FEMA camps, that grows opium in Afghanistan, that is buying all these rounds for the, you know, through Social Security, through Homeland Security. You know, we got drones in the air pretty soon. They got QE3.
No, they're already
QE Unlimited.
I don't know about back east right now, but we see them in California all the time, They're using drones on a regular basis already.
This is why we got to have you back, Liz, because, as I said, there's not that many outlets out there that's actually supplying this information, or at least maybe not as many people need to go to these sites that should be out there. So, you know, we'll have you back.
One of the things I'll tell everybody is follow something on Twitter called Citizen Streams. They will link you up to every streamer across the world, whether they're using Ustream or Bamboozer. There are people just like me all over the world who are going out there and risking their lives and risking their freedom to film and to show you what's going on. There's people in Syria. There's people in Egypt. There's people all over the place. I have friends in New York. I have friends in Oakland, friends in Portland, you know, and we've built this incredible network. We even rely on each other a lot. We've built this incredible news network where we all help each other out, and what you see is what you get. I mean, you can't lie about what you're seeing with your own eyes in real time. So if you see this stuff get posted, take a chance and watch it, and you know, you might learn something.
Yeah, definitely. And before you go, plug your Twitter, your Facebook, Ustream, and Truth is Scary one more time.
Sure. You can follow me on Twitter at Liz Savage. You can follow me on Ustream, ustream.tv/channel/savagetruth. You can follow my blog, savagetruth.wordpress.com, and also truthisscary.com. And I also sometimes do a blog on OccupyLosAngeles.org.
And we're going to bring the Savage Truth to GirlWick.net. We're going to have you on from time to time, discuss these issues. As I said, You know, I know you've woke people up. I've woke some people up. We get the word out. You know, information is so important. You know, the info war, there's a phrase out there, InfoWars, InfoWars.com. We are in an info war. And if
and
we don't get the information
thing.
Out, yeah.
May Day 2013. It's a day that all workers need to rise up against your bosses, against the powers that be. Take the day off if you can. Go on strike. Organize a strike. Organize against what you don't like. Talk to the other people you work with. Stop being taken advantage of. Take the day off and join everybody else out in the streets. And if you don't take the day off, you're going to be snarled in traffic all day. So you're better off taking the day off, going out in the streets, getting educated, meeting the people who are fighting for your rights. Because if you're not fighting for your rights, silence is consent. You're consenting to them doing this to you. And the time is now to stop it before it's too late and we're just in a complete fascist world.
Absolutely. So let's plug that as that day gets closer. We have you back on. We'll be talking about that day and definitely mention that. As they said in the Rick Derringer song, Real American for Hulk Hogan, fight for the rights of every man, even those that are not going to stand up for their own rights. We're going to fight for the rights of everybody out there. So, again, Liz,
exactly.
We do appreciate it. We'll have you back on real soon. And keep up the very good work out there.
Thank you. Thanks for your time today. And I hope everybody walked away with a good piece of information here today.